And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interview. Today I have not one, but two fabulous guests, the writer, director, producer, the wonderful creative team of Quantum Suicide is here. Welcome, guys.
Hey. Thanks
for having us. Hey, how you doing?
Good. I guess I really have to start where this idea came from. Because I don't know what to think. I think you don't see films about this often. Like, it's a very different kind of film. Like, there's no blood, there is drama, but it's not between a person. It's more like a person and their theory.
Totally. It's a very, very, like, it's very much hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
I guess there's two parts to the answer to this question. One of them was like, this is the movie we could make. This is a movie we could make, like, low budget. It's based, like, we built the set in the garage in the house I was living in. So this was a movie we could make. Part two, like, where the idea came from, when I was, like, a long time ago, when I was in university, one day my friend Carrie was like, hey, have you guys heard about this thing called quantum suicide, this theory, this thought experiment in quantum mechanics? And no one had heard of it. I hadn't heard of it. And then he explained it to us and everyone was like, yeah, that's wild, Carrie. That's a crazy idea. But I was like, there's a movie in there. Like, I'm going to make this into a movie.
Okay. So let's work off that. I mean, when you people show people this film,
yeah,
do they have a hard time understanding the concept? I mean, I'm being honest here. It took me a while to grasp what you were getting at. And is that a normal thing people have, or they get it instantly?
Certainly the average viewer does not get the movie instantly. Like,
okay,
sure.
Good. So I feel good then.
Yeah. It's certainly hard sci-fi. I mean, it's not for everyone. Like, this, it's science fiction, and it's like, it's pretty serious science fiction. But yeah, we've had reactions that are all over the place, right? Some people are like, this movie's brilliant, and some people are like I don't get it. It's confusing. I don't understand.
That means they went on their phones. If it's confusing, I mean, I think all your hints are there, but you got to focus.
Yeah.
I really don't think you go, what's going on? Then you're done. Like, you have such hard science at times throughout this.
Well, totally. I was laughing when we started posting this and releasing the film. And it made me think of, like, you know, when we went online, I had elementary school teachers being like, oh, I can't wait to watch this. And I'm like, you know, I kind of want to give a little disclaimer, Mrs. Cozen from 1997, you know what I mean? Be careful what you wish for.
So I did put my notes. Is this based on a true story? It kind of is that. You're definitely basing off something you heard.
I mean, this isn't a true story about a scientist who commits quantum suicide, but it's based on a real theory. It's based on, yeah, like, real theoretical quantum mechanics.
Okay. Okay. We're going to move off quantum mechanics because that's way
cool.
Above
that sounds good. Level. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go into more of the making of it. I want to discuss that garage set. How much time did you spend on this? Like, this thing looks real. Looks like I could move in right now and work on stuff.
The truth is, we started working on this film 15 years ago.
It took
longer than anyone would suspect, even.
I think you were building it even prior to that, though. You were spending time just tinkering away at the garage for a little while before it even became an idea, in a way.
I was probably it's hard because it was so long ago, but I think in 2007 in the fall we started building the set in my garage, and we, like, principal photography was 2008 in the summer. And then we came back, we did reshoots the next year, 2009 in the summer. And then we spent, I don't even know, like, 13 years in post-production and trying to get financing to finish our visual effects and our sound. It took forever to finish this movie because we didn't have any money.
Oh, I completely understand that. I want to go back to what you guys are telling me. Okay.
Yeah.
As a producer, your job is to find money, last time I checked. I could be wrong here. It took you 13 years to find funding. How did you stay on a project? I understand how the writer director did. I get that. Yeah. But you as a producer must have gone nuts.
Well, the whole, like, when we started the idea, basically we were still in film school. So the concept of making something with money was pretty foreign, you know. And so we were just in the mode of making something. And so when I went and visited Garrett in his garage, and I'm like, "You guys built a particle accelerator? Like, what the hell?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm thinking of making a movie about it." And I'm like, "Okay, that's
Okay.
awesome." And I go, "What's the movie called?" He's like, "Quantum Suicide." And I'm like, "I don't care what happens in this movie. Like, I want to be a part of this, right?" You know? And so right from the get-go, there was no talk of like, "Oh, what's the budget going to be?" It was just the talk of like, "How do we make this right now? And we'll worry about all the consequences later," kind of thing, if that makes sense. And so
It
it's kind of
does.
a perfect storm where at that moment, it was also the recession. And so a lot of people were underworked or out of work. And so we had a lot of friends who were able to give us a lot of time, which was free, you know, and we just had to supply them with a good amount of beer and food and good times. And yeah, and so that's kind of like the spirit of it. It was never really about money. It was just more what we could get away with in a way, like as an idea and as a process of shooting it. And then yeah, it was kind of a unique experience to make it.
It was also the film I had written originally. It was going to be a short film, and then when Shane came on, Shane was like, why don't we make it a feature? And
Interesting.
I didn't have a good reason not to. We didn't understand what we were getting into, but then we quickly pivoted to this is going to be a feature film, and that was probably the step that meant it instead of taking a year, it took over a decade.
And also the way that the films are funded in Canada for the most part are you have to go through like a whole grant program application, and like we don't have any access to angel investors, so like we did those grant applications, but the catch 22 is you have to have experience and you have to have done films to get those grants and all that, so we're kind of stuck in that world of you just got to do it yourself at that point.
Okay,
Yeah,
you
we
did
applied for many grants and
and
we never got
nothing.
anything.
That sounds
Nothing.
like the Canadian government. You were discussing the sound was an issue. Now, what was your issue with the sound, getting it organized?
Like basically, yeah, like we were in film school when we like had this idea for this film, and when we shot the film, we were shortly out of film school. So we could do production. We could handle all of like how to shoot a film and cut a film. But when we ran into problems, when it was the things that we couldn't do ourselves, and that was largely the audio and the visual effects. So those were things that we needed other professionals who could deliver stuff that's at a high level that looked and sounded the way we wanted, and we didn't have funding to pay people fairly. So it was trying to get it done for virtually no money. That's
And
why it took so long.
we went through different iterations of teams, but understandably they would fall off at a certain point once they realized how much work it was. At the start, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, I can do this," and they get going. They'd be on like their fourth scene or fifth scene and just be like, "I can't do another 30. Like, what the hell?" You know. So it was kind of eye-opening to see how far you could push people until you needed to actually provide them with some funds for their services.
So is this a piecemeal production then, from what I'm understanding? Or did one person finally do all the sound?
No, in the end, we ended up like it's like there's one visual effects guy did all the 3D visual
Okay.
effects, and there's one sound team who did it all. And kind of all the work that got done like in the little piecemeal pieces before that all basically got thrown away.
Oh, wow. So all this work of these guys, oh. Okay, so you could have the short could exist then, so if we have stuff for it or something. Are you
Yeah,
keeping the
we could have
stuff?
we certainly could have cut a short film, whatever, back in 2009 and released that. But yeah, like like the sound team that we got on, like they didn't want to take other people's half done work. Like they're like, we're going to
No,
take the
I
production
understand
studio
that.
and we're doing it from scratch. Like we're building all of
Okay.
it. We're writing all this. The composer is writing all the music from scratch. Like, yeah, it didn't make sense to do it piecemeal.
Okay, I'll go to music because I want to go back to the set, but we're going to get there. The
Yeah.
music. So you definitely have a different style of music you don't hear every day in this. I mean, it's science fiction, so you got to go for a different sound all the time.
Yeah.
So
Yeah,
where
the
did,
music's
how'd you find this
incredible.
guy? You have no money, so you must have found him somewhere in Canada.
Like in the end, I ended up like paying people, like we like I had saved up enough money to finance the post-production myself.
Oh,
So
good.
during COVID, like 2020, 2021, we got Lions Entertainment on board, which is an audio company up here that my friend Crispin runs. And they took on all the sound, and we got our composer through them. Yeah, our composer Mark Lozeski did an amazing job. I'm so happy with all the music that we have.
Okay, I want to go back to the location for a second. How long did you honestly spend building this? Like, you have wires, you have, like, it looks like a real lab. And you're saying you started building before the film started. So I need to know how long it actually took to build this.
Like from my recollection, it was like one fall. I would say it took 3 months to build that.
Okay, so where did you find this stuff? Did you phone everybody you knew and say, hey, do you have any cables? Do you have any monitors?
I mean, we went to every thrift store within
Okay.
100 kilometers and grabbed every like piece of old like old electronics, old televisions, old monitors. We went to recycling facilities, like the metal scrapyard, just anywhere where there was like junk and old technology that we could take for free or for super cheap, and then we just tear it apart. And you know, yeah, we got the circuit boards. We were able, I don't remember where, but there was somewhere like one of those recycling places. We got circuit boards like by the ton or whatever. Like we just got giant bags of circuit boards for super cheap. We were just
Okay.
scrounging pieces and then putting them
My
together.
last question about location, just so you know. The green wall of the garage. What is up with that green wall?
What do you mean the green, like, what do you mean the green wall?
There is a green wall. I wonder if that was color corrected or is there an actual painted green wall? Oh,
It's
sorry, of the room,
gone.
not the garage. A green wall of a room. There's this
The
weird
house.
green wall. Sorry, not the garage.
No, that was painted. That was what the basement of the house I lived in at the time looked like.
Oh my
And
God.
that's the house that we used for, yeah, for all of them.
And
Okay.
there's a lot of homes, like when you're starting out in Vancouver because the cost of living is so high, you end up in some kind of random, weird, dilapidated. I think there was mold even at
I'm
some
sure there was
point.
mold.
Oh,
I'm sure there was hidden
yeah.
by
And that's just how
that
you
green
live.
wall.
Like, and so Garrett had all his roommates there while we're shooting. And so it was good enough for them. So we thought it was good enough for us. And so I think I even slept there a few nights for sure.
So, working on the script, how hard was this to write all the science stuff?
I mean, like in retrospect, I think it's a really crazy script. I think it's a wild movie to have made. At the time, it didn't feel very crazy to me. But I don't know. I've always been pretty obsessed with theoretical like physics that talks about the like how reality works. Is stuff that's always been really interesting to me. So I was already like I was really deep into quantum mechanics, and I wanted to understand all of the science anyways, aside from this film. But working on this film gave me a really good reason to dig into all of it. So I did a lot of studying and wrote a lot of papers. And I mean, the making of this movie happened in parallel with my own kind of deep dive into quantum mechanics and like into these theories.
Interesting.
It didn't feel that hard at the time, but in retrospect, it's a crazy script to have written.
Shane, after reading this, did you have questions going, okay, does this make sense to somebody? If it makes sense to you, I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, for me, I always kind of looked at the parallel storyline to like all of us making it, you know, because like the film is about obsession. The film is about, a lack of resources, but still have like a goal in mind that you could try and pull off, even though if it's unrealistic to have a particle accelerator in your garage, came and still did it. Like, whereas maybe it's unrealistic for a bunch of 25-year-olds at a film school to make a feature. It's kind of like the same kind of dream passion without the people around you believing in you, so to speak. And so I kind of try to always kept it there. But at the time, like Garrett, I was also on my own quantum physics journey. And I tried to understand it as much as you could, but then I kind of took Solasin's idea that the more you look at quantum physics, the more it becomes clear, but it never ever kind of gets in focus. You know, it just becomes a little more clear, but and I think that's even for the highest level of scientists, they're still out there searching for answers. And so it's really not about like the final, like what does this mean? It's more like the journey of what it means. It's...
Has any scientist seen this film? I gotta ask, because I mean, they would understand it better than I would.
I mean, I'm sure scientists have seen it. We were on Sci-Fi Remnant podcast last
There
week,
you
and
go.
but yeah, one of their hosts is a scientist, so we spoke about it. I'm
Excellent.
sure other scientists have seen the film as
I
well.
have no comment about the science. I'm sorry, I don't know. It works for me. I liked it, so I'm fine with that.
So far, the
How?
feedback we've gotten as like has been basically universally that the science, like there's no holes in the science.
Oh, excellent. That's what I
Yeah, which
wanted to
I feel
know.
quite good about.
And you showed it in France to probably some scientists, right?
Yeah, we played at the biggest sci-fi festival in Europe, or the biggest sci-fi convention in Europe. So I'm sure there were scientists in that audience.
Excellent. Okay. Where's your lead actor come from? And I do have a question about him eventually.
So Andrew, he was always a guy in film school who was in everybody's production, you know? And
That's
then
so
we were on a music video once we were doing, and me and him were outside hanging out, and we just immediately like knew that we were going to be best friends. It was like, yay, best friends. And then shortly after that, we're going to make this movie, and he was kind of doubt he kind of wanted to be an actor, you know? He was acting. Got an agent and stuff. So we were like, okay, this guy's going to be the next big thing. You know, I remember people on set even saying that. They're like, Andrew, you're going to be the next big thing. And then I presented Garrett with the idea of having him as our lead. And one, he's really charismatic. And two, we knew that based on our friendship, that he was always going to give it everything he could. And that was so important when you're not getting paid, you're on camera by yourself the entire time. In a garage with hot lights. This is before LED, so we just had lights pouring down on him in the summer, and the poor guy just did everything on such a high level that still when I watch it, I've seen this film hundreds of times, and I still watch it and I go, wow, he really, really did a good job. We were so lucky to have him. And yeah, and like still to this day, he's one of our best friends for sure. Like,
Oh, that's good to know that you guys made it through. Well, you took away my next question about how hot was your set because he's sweating a lot in this film. It's in my notes. So, how did you transition while you were filming? I mean, you're just out of film school, it's your first feature, and you got a friend you know, and then you're working with a little child in some scenes. I mean, that's because they're all at night with her. So, I will get there. So, if you want to wrap that in the same question, shooting at night and a little girl and all that stuff.
So the little girl, Kennedy Montano, who's not so little anymore.
No, definitely not.
She was by far the most professional, you know, person working on this production. Because she was an actual child actor. She was in major Hollywood films back then, and she was in commercials. She was super professional. It was amazing working with Kennedy, because everything was so on point. She nailed everything. She killed every scene she was in. And her mom, Judy Montano, was so professional. Did such like just have like having them be a part of the production elevated the whole thing. And I loved the days when we were shooting with Kennedy. It was like everyone was kind of like everyone was on their best behavior. We were like running a tighter ship when Kennedy was on set. I loved having Kennedy around.
So, did you find it easier to shoot with her as opposed to your friend, or about the same?
Like this is just Kennedy. Like Kennedy killed every scene she was in,
So
and when
she.
she was around, everyone brought it. So like it
Okay,
was
good.
production was easier when Kennedy was around, I think. We were more professional.
Okay, but you're always shooting her in the dark.
Largely, yes.
Well, almost every shot. I felt bad. I'm like, how late is this kid up?
Yeah, and it was summer, so those must have been late nights.
So you don't really light it. I mean, you have very light light. So you're just at a film school. So how did you light this is what I wanted to know.
Well, basically, our DP was also a fellow grad with us, and he was working at a camera house. And then I ended up in the second year when we did the reshoots, I was working at that camera house as well. And so then we would take all the gear on the weekends from there, right? For a very fraction of the cost, maybe a couple hundred dollars. And then we would just use the resources on the weekend and then return it on Monday, and like no questions asked. And so that's one way we got around spending money on lights and stuff like that. And it kind of, we even had monitors and stuff, which was pretty cool for us back then. We were like, wow, we got a monitor. The downside was that we had to flip the monitor upside down because the camera we were using would flip the image. So
Because
we
the
were,
lens adapter was upside down. Yeah.
oh,
So then we'd have to put the TV upside down. So like if like it was almost professional, you know, like just a little bit off, but kind of gave it more character. And then he killed it. Like even though it was shot so long ago and on 720p, you know, when I watch it now, I still enjoy his process and what he brought to the cinematography because it kind of holds up over 15 years.
Yeah, there's a bathtub scene. You have a camera placed on an overhead shot. You know what I'm talking about? Now I'm
Yeah,
trying
with
to
Andrew
figure
from the
out,
mirror.
are you holding it up or where are you on that shot?
That's got to be on sticks.
That's what I was wondering. That's what I'm asking you, straight out.
It was
Yeah.
straight.
I mean, there were a bunch of I was always like, whatever, just shoot it handheld. I was always like, okay with shooting stuff handheld, and then a bunch of stuff I ended up like stabilizing in post, because
Yes.
it should have been locked off. But that shot in particular, I'm sure was actually locked off.
Okay. All the scenes inside the house look like handheld on the couch and stuff like that, which is fine. I'm just wondering if that's what you were going for.
Well, we actually kind of had an interesting process because we were doing it on the weekend and we weren't holding people to like they had to be there. We'd just be like, hey, we're doing this thing for 11 weekends in a row. What dates can you make it? We want you there as much as possible, but it is the summer and we know that you have family and other commitments. And so we had a really good number of talented camera people on our team. And so we would kind of look at who we had access to that weekend and their style, and then appropriate the script to like that operator, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah,
So
that makes total sense.
one guy's really good at like capturing action and all that. We would use him for certain things, and then other people kind of had like a different approach, and we would use them for certain things.
Yeah, because like
So.
Mike Crouch was like shot amazing handheld work always. So we'd try to schedule if Mike was on set, we'd be trying to shoot the stuff we wanted handheld. So we had like our best handheld camera up on it. And then like Casey, the DP, like he handheld was like not so much his thing. So yeah, the more static stuff, stuff we'd shoot with Case, and kind of Dave was in between.
How did that work for your editing process then? If you're getting all different kind of, I mean, you obviously know different shot selection and obviously get a different feel, and you get that through the movie. I'm not saying it's not there, it's 100% there.
I mean, I feel like everything we did with the camera was purposeful. So I don't know. I feel like it's, I mean, there's some films and some DPs who like there's just like one look, right? Like your whole movie has one specific style to it. But then there's other directors who use like the whole gamut of cinematography to tell their story. And I wanted to do more of that. Like I wanted to really use the camera work to accentuate what's going on in these scenes. And that means like, yeah, some of it, like the camera work is very dynamic then. It's based on what's happening. And we had a lot of it, but it didn't cause any problems in the edit.
Oh,
Because
okay. That's what
it was kind of done on purpose.
now going forward for your next feature, which I presume you're going to keep doing features because they tend to do get a little bit more distribution and stuff. What would you do differently? Would you try to shoot in like 14 days, 7 days, or would you still do the weekend thing?
I mean, really, like you're doing everything differently on your second feature. Like for sure. So I'm like big things off the top of my head is like we're gonna have enough money, we're gonna have real funding before we start.
Good
So
luck.
Yeah. We're not like I'm not making another film like this, where you don't have funds and you're just trying to like scrape it together. I want the script to be super tight before we start shooting anything. Like a lot of this film was built in post, and I think you can save yourself so much like energy and headache by doing all your editing before you start shooting. So you should be editing in the script phase. You should like having a really, really tight script where everything's worked out before, yeah, before day one. I don't think it's realistic to shoot on weekends. That's not how the real world works. So I don't think that's ever really happening again, a film where we're only shooting on weekends.
That's a once in a lifetime thing. I
Yeah.
think so too. I'm pretty
Yeah.
impressed.
I just picture myself calling up the same people now and being like, "Hey, 11 weekends, what are you doing?" And they're like, "Click. No."
Yeah, there's no way. But yeah, having the money to do it, having the money to do it before you start, having everything tight before you start, and doing it quickly, like having the money and spending the money to make a film properly.
Okay, I'm going to move on to fun questions. I think I've covered everything. I think I'm doing good. Because your first time on the show, I need your favorite film from each of you.
Well, mine's Apocalypse Now, for sure. Apocalypse Now.
One favorite film is so hard.
I know. You can cheat. It's fine. Many people
Like
do.
maybe it's The Prestige.
Oh, nice choice. One I don't get often. Very nice choice. Your favorite movie snack?
Movie snack? Personally, I'm like pretty against eating in movies.
Thank you. I'm with you. I'm with you.
So like I don't like it when people eat popcorn. I don't like it when people are like stuffing their faces during the film. Like I think these should be separate activities,
I
personally.
100% agree.
I like to the only place I'll have Coke is a movie.
There you go. So your second feature is about to come out. Who are you guys going to definitely work with in the future on it? Wide open. Take who you want.
I mean, I truly have no idea.
Fair enough.
Oh,
Before I let you go, tell me, sorry, Shane, go ahead.
were you asking like what actor?
Yes, one actor.
Or, oof, that's a good question. Probably Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he probably would do it actually. That's a
It'd
good choice.
be cool to make like a genre film with Nick Cage for sure.
Well, that Long Legs, that's all Graham Fortin edited it. It's all Vancouver guys.
There you go.
Cool.
You got it in. Before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find your great film.
So the film's out on streaming and VOD. The release date was October 18. So you can stream it on Tubi and Plex. You can rent it on Amazon, Fandango, Fios, and cable in the States.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you so
Totally.
much.
Thank you, Simon.